Hello and welcome to the very, very first episode of a brand new podcast called Straight Outta Crompton. I am Laura Crompton. It's me. It's coming straight out of me. There is some logic behind the name. I am a British person. I'm based in Manchester and I wanted to make this podcast to document my journey as I relocate with my child to Los Angeles, hopefully, in the next coming months. And I wanted to make a podcast about it. I wanted to take you on this journey with me. The highs and lows, believe me, there are highs, there are lows. And I just thought it would be really interesting and a great resource for anyone else that's considering making the move or just really interested to know what that would be like. But I'm not kidding myself. You know, I don't believe that I could get lots of people wanting to tune in every week just to listen about me. So I'm going to give you a little bit more than that. Each episode, I'm going to introduce you to somebody fascinating, someone that I know, and maybe in time, other people that I don't know that I will get to know through the show, who have themselves made the move to LA. You know, LA and Hollywood is synonymous with the entertainment industry, and there are so many people that move there to seek their fame and fortune. And so I wanted to speak to those guys and hear about their own experiences, what compelled them to move to LA in the first place, whether it lived up to their expectations, what those expectations were, what were the highs, the lows, what are their tips, what would they recommend to us, and what would they really miss if they weren't there anymore. I want to hear from them. So I'm going to be taking you on a journey each week that will narrate my own personal move, hopefully, and alongside that, tell the stories of other really fascinating people. So without further ado, shall we get started? I'm going to take you back a little bit and tell you a little bit about me and how I got to where I got to. So, as I said, my name is Laura Crompton. I just 2 months ago reached the ripe old age of 40, which is insane, by the way. I definitely still feel like I'm 20, but that's a different story for a different podcast. I am a single mother of a boy called Devon, who just this week turned 9. In fact, in a couple of hours, we're heading off to host his 9th birthday party. And we live in an area of Manchester called Sale, in South Manchester. It's a very suburban, family-friendly part of the city. And I moved here because I have a child, because I wanted to get him in a good school and all of that stuff. So we've been based here, living our Manchester lives, going about our daily business. But I'm someone that has previously lived overseas. I spent 5 years living in Mexico. I spent a couple of years in Ireland. I did a short stint in LA actually already as a student, and in Cuba as well, and Spain. I've lived up in Scotland. So I've been around, but I've been ever since I had my son. So for the last 9 years, I've been back in the Northwest, which is where I'm from, close to my family. Playing it safe, I suppose, you know, getting that support network and everything else. And then about 18 months ago, a former boss of mine from a former PR agency where I used to work in Dublin called me up and said, "Hey, look, we're looking to open an office on the west coast of the US. We thought of you. Do you fancy it?" Let me paint a picture. I think it was end of April, beginning of May when he called, and it was snowing on that day in Manchester, which obviously is very unusual. Winter had gone on for what's felt like about 9 months at that point, and I was like, absolutely, sign me up, when can I start? However, of course, it's never that simple, because I had to give 6 months notice in my job. I had to then wait a year to be able to apply for the visa. And so a very, very long and arduous 19 months later, here we are. It's about to be New Year's Eve. It's the 28th of December, 2022. And the wheels are in motion and we're moving, or we're supposed to be moving. So I took the job and I've been working remotely, essentially setting up the American or the LA office of a European PR agency. And I've been doing it from here and it's gone pretty well. It's not like when I move, I've got a new job, it's going to be more of the same, but it's fine. I'm happy with that. However, what has happened this year, which has been a real game changer for me, is that I've fallen into podcasting and I've fallen into radio. And this is not something that I'd ever done before. I'd done bits and bobs of drama and theatre and sort of extra work on TV shows and stuff like that. But I'd never really done anything that you could call presenting. And through a weird series of coincidences and fate this year, I miraculously found myself presenting my own radio show on the BBC, on BBC Radio Manchester. So I've had a show Friday evenings from 7 till 10 for the last few months. My last show was a couple of weeks ago, which was devastating. In anticipation of the move, really, we agreed that I would only do it through till Christmas. But it has been fantastic. Like, I cannot overstate. I've absolutely loved it. And so, you know, I was left feeling a little bit bereft at the thought of not having my show and not having an outlet. And I thought, what can I do to extend that and to kind of keep up the momentum so that 2022 doesn't feel like a weird blip, you know, in my life, where I don't look back and go, oh, what was that weird year where I was on the radio? I want it to be a continuation of something. And so I thought, you know, let's do this podcast. Let's document the journey. However, the universe has conspired against me the last few weeks. So my intention was to begin this podcast and get it ready and get it lined up, ready for my last show on the radio. However, I've just been wiped out by the most horrendous flu that I knew existed. It meant that I didn't even get to do my last show on the radio. I was too sick to do my last show, and I haven't been able to record anything. I'm going to edit out the coughs. I do keep coughing, but I'm going to edit them out so you won't hear them. But it means that I am weeks behind schedule with this. I've started to do some of my interviews. I've been kind of steeling myself to think, how can I get going, and what can I find to talk about? How can I bring this narrative to you in a way that's logical? And then last night, while I was procrastinating about that exact thing, something really unexpected happened. So in my mind, or according to the timelines that I had indeed from the immigration lawyer, I was due to have my embassy interview on the 9th of January, which is in less than 2 weeks. I was going to go to London. I was going to do my embassy interview. The visa was going to be approved. I was going to be moving in a month, 6 weeks. And then last night I got an email through from my lawyer saying that the visa has not gone through. It's not been denied, but there's been something called an RFE, which is a request for evidence, which means that even if it does eventually get approved, which we're still hoping it will, it could add another 2 months onto the process, which I'm sure you can imagine at the end of 19 months of waiting just feels excruciating. So I'm pretty disheartened today, I'm not going to lie. You know, I've been preparing the house to rent it out here because I'm not going to sell my house. I'm going to rent it. We've been sort of getting rid of some of our bulkier items and, you know, doing the work that needs doing and the inspections that need doing in order to become a landlord rather than an owner. And now it's just throwing everything into question. You know, I had in my mind that we would be moving in the winter, and now it's probably going to be the spring. You know, we were on the race to the finish, and now I don't know if we've turned it from a sprint to a mid-distance run, or if it's one that just we'll just crash out of. I've no idea. But I thought that the podcast would serve as some sort of dear diary, I guess, to help me through these tricky times. And so here I am, making a podcast about a move to LA that may or may not happen. I promise that subsequent episodes will be far more cheerful than this, and I'm sure that I will have some positive things to share with you as we go. But I'm going to leave you with that for now. I'm going to introduce you to our first guest, and I'll pop back at the end to sign off. And then I really look forward to hopefully sharing with you what's going to be a very, very positive and a very real journey to LA. So thank you so much for joining me on this. Now, I'm delighted to introduce you to Dwayne Johnson Cochran. He is our very, very first guest. He was raised in Chicago, and he trained as a geologist at the University of Illinois in Chicago and worked for an oil company briefly until he found his true calling as a filmmaker. After working as a journalist and cameraman for local newspapers and television stations, he found a position as a writer and producer in an ad agency, producing numerous commercials and short films. He then moved to Hollywood after his very first spec screenplay, My Tribe Is Lost, sold to Steven Spielberg and DreamWorks. and he's since gone on to create and produce and direct a whole host of films and TV shows, and he's also been teaching screenwriting for 11 years at USC. Welcome to the podcast, Dwayne, my very first guest. Delighted to have you with us.
Delighted to be here, Laura.
So, Dwayne, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us who you are, what you do, and where in LA you're based right now.
My name is Dwayne Johnson Cochran. I'm a writer, director, and a producer. I work in film, television, documentary. I also am a producing partner with Bassett Vance Productions here in Los Angeles. And I also teach writing. I've done it for different places around at USC and other places. I am an avid filmmaker and avid music lover and avid sportsman and all that kind of stuff.
So that's incredible. There's like nothing you don't do. A man of many, many talents. So you're in LA now, but you're not originally from LA. Is that right?
I'm originally from Chicago. I arrived here in the 90s. I had a whole different sort of career in Chicago. I worked at public broadcasting as a documentary filmmaker. For that, I worked in advertising in Chicago. And then my degree in college was in science and geophysics. So I kind of worked in that when I came out of college, but that was not my path. So I immediately went over to media and things that I loved and wanted to do. And, you know, coming here was an opportunity because Chicago is a great media place, advertising, documentaries, news. But I always wanted to be in the film business, and I kind of wrote my way into the business. That's how I got here.
Incredible. Right. So that was in the 90s. So take me back. You were in Chicago. You were already working in film. What was it that specifically kind of pushed you or facilitated the move to LA? Like, was there something specific that pushed you there?
I've always wanted to, I was a film nerd, a film nut, from 18, 19 years old. I ran the Film Society at my college. I literally showed the movies from the back of the theater. That was my job. So I was totally into it, seeing movies every day all over the town. And so I was addicted to cinema, but I couldn't call it something as my profession because I had to make a living.
Right.
And I just couldn't, in anybody's right mind, say, okay, I want to be this guy because you have to pay rent, you have to figure out what to do practically. But I did find myself very frustrated because I wanted to be a filmmaker in Chicago and I couldn't find anybody writing screenplays who were any good. And I kept hiring people to write scripts. And I was working in advertising and I was working in documentaries. And I would hire these writers to write things and they'd come back and I give them a little money and get what you pay for, and it wasn't good. So one day a thing happened. I was playing soccer and I broke my ankle one summer, and I was in a wheelchair for the whole summer.
Wow.
And I couldn't really move, and I just lived in an apartment with my girlfriend, and basically I just bought my first computer, and I was sort of tied to the computer. And I had this idea for a movie that I always wanted to see. I love this movie called The Bicycle Thief. I thought, well, it'd be great to do a homage to that. And so I wrote my idea was the Car Thief. And I just used the Italian neorealism film as my sort of basis and just totally create a whole new world based on Chicago, South Side, a father and a son, and losing of a car, and a relationship film. And I wrote this thing in the summertime, and then I printed it all out and gave it to my friends to read and gave it to people I didn't know to read it. And they all said, oh, this is really great. So I gave it to one good friend who's not here anymore. And he said, I know a guy at CAA. I think he's a liberal. He had the Village Voice on his desk. You should send it to him. So I'm at PBS at the time. I'm working there, doing news and nightly news. I was producing nightly news and doing documentaries and writing my script. And Well, I sent the script to this one agent at CAA. And one day, the phone rang. I was directing, they call it Pledge Night, where, you know, I call it the Begathons. You know,
begging for charity drive,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, the PBS, you know, Begathons every night. So I was directing it, and the phone rang in the booth, and it was this assistant from CAA saying, "We got your script in the mail. We don't know who you are. Who are you? We read this. All the assistants read it. We really like it. Who are you?" And I'm like, "Me, you know." And, and they said, "Well, we want to give the agent the script to read, but we want to know, has anybody else in town read the script?" I said, "Well, this guy and that guy and this guy and that guy." And they said, no, this town.
The only town that counts.
The only town that counts. I said, "No, just you." And she said, "Okay, thank you." And he hung up. And about a week later, they called and said, the agent said he read it and loved it and said, "When can you come out? And we want to talk to you about representation." I was in shock.
That's incredible. Like with the first script that you'd written.
Yeah, first script.
Wow. And so how quickly did you manage to then up and move?
Well, a couple of months later, I went out to meet the agent and mm-hmm. some other agents, and they asked me, would I be interested in going on meetings? And I was still working at PBS. So I took a few days off, and I said, sure. So they had exposed my screenplay to a lot of people. So I went on 30 meetings in 5 days.
Wow.
And I came back home with 3 writing jobs. So I quit my job and I stayed in Chicago for a year writing these movies that I just got writing jobs from. So I took a year, and finally, they were like, "You know what? It'd be better if you lived here. You know, you meet more people and you'd be more acclimated to the city, and you're good, but you need to be here, you know."
Mm-hmm.
About a year later, I got in my car and drove out to LA.
Wow. 1992, which, if I'm not mistaken, and forgive me because obviously this is a Brit with limited knowledge, but things were kind of sketchy in 92 in LA, no?
Well, the Rodney King situation happened the year earlier.
Right.
And the riots were that year. I was definitely down there shooting photographs of it. I was in the middle of it. Just the fires and the trucks, and it was a lot of angst in the city, rightly so, because of that decision and the racial divide in the city. Mm. I think Koreatown was, people were on top of roofs with rifles. The police were going left and right, allowing looting to happen because they just couldn't stop it. And Black folks were particularly upset. We were very upset because of what that verdict was about. And then there became the aftermath of rebuilding and promises and all the things that came from that. And people got fired and police chief was run out of town. But still, the city wasn't, and to that matter, still isn't, the sort of greatest place to live. You have less money. But if you do well, it's a great place to live. Los Angeles is an amazing place to live. You have, a means, and you have a career, and you have a reason to be here, So it really depends on who you are and what you do.
So you finally moved to LA. Where in the city did you head in the first instance? Did you have a particular part of town that you knew you needed to head to for work, or how did that pan out?
I had a great friend who I went to college with who lived at the base of Laurel Canyon near Sunset Boulevard, in the Sunset Strip. He lived on a street called Selma, and it was a furnished apartment there. And I moved in that building. He was there. I went to college with him, and he kind of took care of me in a sense. He kind of said, "This is a good place to go to. That place is terrible to eat, and don't be on Sunset Boulevard on Friday night." I mean, he was just giving me the lay of the land, and so it was good. I was there for like a year, year and a half. Then I moved to near the Beverly Center. And then from the Beverly Center, I moved to Santa Monica. And so I was moving around town, different places, depending on, your level of success.
Right. Right. So and you headed out towards the beach.
Yes. Yeah.
In terms of like, obviously you'd visited LA before, you'd had all these meetings. Also, you'd worked in the television industry before you moved as well. So you had a degree of exposure, but did you have expectations of the city and did it live up to the expectations? Was there anything that was kind of different to how you were imagining it to be?
Well, to be perfectly honest, when I first moved here, literally moved my stuff here into this furnished apartment, and I lived at Selma and Laurel Canyon. You look out your window and you see cars coming down Laurel Canyon. So that's your view. And then you don't see people walking down the street much because the streets are very narrow, the actual sidewalks. So any person coming from a city, you have to acclimate yourself to a place where there's not a lot of foot traffic. There's a lot of cars. But the more important thing that got me was the level of loneliness that can creep into being a new person in a city where you don't know too many people. There's both a mixture of tourists, newbies, and natives. Wherever you go, you meet people who were probably the most funniest person in Nebraska living here now. And now they're in LA and they're like, right. Yeah. You know, so they're the class clown now is here. You know, he's at the Comedy Store, or they're on a TV series, or they're trying to be this, or they're writing or producing, or they got an MBA or something. You have a lot of people from other places here. And that's something hard. It's hard sometimes to get used to that. But then there's people who've been here a long time. You meet them too. When I first got here, the first year, I just felt like I felt very homesick.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to go back to Chicago and to my friends and what I knew and what the streets were like and what was down, you know, what, you know, place was open till midnight or whatever. And LA is, I think it's two things. It's vehicular and private, very private. So, you know, there's a lot of gated homes and, you know, there's just a lot of things that you don't really know much about. So that was hard to get used to when I was first got here, that you have to be invited to things. You know, you're not going to just roll up into things in LA.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's a very different kind of place, you know.
And so would you have faced, again, I might be slightly off with my timeline here, but 92, was that around the time where there was that big earthquake as well?
That was 94, I believe.
Okay, so you were there for that.
Yeah.
Presumably, yeah. As far as I know, they don't have earthquakes in Chicago. This is a whole new thing for you.
Yeah. That earthquake was incredible. Well, there was an earthquake. I was at Sundance one year, and I remember an earthquake or a rumble had come through, and I wasn't home. So I got home and everything was all over the place. But then the big one, the Northridge earthquake, I was home. And that was like 3 or 4 in the morning. And I lived on the second floor of a 2-story apartment building near the Beverly Center. And I remember jumping out of bed, everything's moving. The gas broke in my kitchen, and some candle hit the floor. All of a sudden, there's fire everywhere.
Oh my God. Fire in your actual apartment?
My apartment.
Wow. So
the guy next door to me, he was a photographer. He opens my door. He says, "We have Dwayne. We have earthquake. We have fire too. What is going on?" You know, we both jumped out the window and rolled on the ground. You know?
Wow, so that's dramatic. It reminds me of the ride at Universal Studios where you go through the, you know, the earthquake simulation. You had the real thing.
Yeah, we really had it. You know, we had this fire in my kitchen, and things were moving. I think it went on like 45 seconds. This earthquake. And I remember he was a German guy. He says, Dwayne, we don't have fire. We have earthquake. What are you doing? You
know. Oh, my God.
He ran through my apartment. Let's go. We jumped over the railing and rolled on the ground.
Wow.
And the aftermath of that, when it stopped, it was, you know, all the ATMs, everything was off. Nothing was working. So people were lined up at the CVS and all these different stores trying to get water, and they had their buckets trying to get water, and you know, things were not working. So you had to like change the way you're thinking, you know, okay, get the water now, go find food. And you know, it was just, the place was the highways had broken down.
Yeah, Yeah, well, I visited, the first time I ever visited LA would have been, I forget if it was, it was around that time. It was around that time because I had family over there, and I remember seeing the fallen highways and just being like, what is this place? Like,
yeah. Who would live here?
Yeah, right. And here I am. Yet here I am. And so, you know, you mentioned earlier how people are kind of private and people were not, there wasn't such a sense of community. Did something like that bring people together? Did you find that, that people started looking out for their neighbors a little more around that time?
I remember the people across the way, is big apartment building. It was like a 6-story apartment buildings. They would, you would see them on your balcony and they would look at you, but they never waved or said hello. And when the earthquake happened, we were all outside 4 o'clock in the morning talking to each other.
Right.
And the person next door and down the street and the person who rented that store there, they were all talking on Beverly Boulevard. And for a moment, it brought people together. And then, of course, it was over and we never saw each other again.
Right. Well, it's kind of like the pandemic. I don't know if there was anything over there like there was here, but in the early days of the pandemic, at 8 p.m. on, I feel like it was on a Tuesday or on a Thursday, or I forget, one day of the week, everybody would go outside and we would, I don't know why we'd clap for the health service. I don't know why we'd do it, but that was a time that we would see our neighbors once a week, you know, during early 2020 when we were just at home the whole time. Yeah. And it did, it felt different for a time. You felt more, you had more concern about the people in your street, the people maybe that you'd never even met before.
You were more connected. I agree. You know, when the pandemic began, I did remember going to my window, opening it and hitting a bell. And everyone's, all the windows were all hitting bells for the health service people and the first responders and everything. Mm-hmm. And that was, you would look across and see people, you know, hitting bells and stuff. And that was actually very invigorating, of a community invigoration, you know.
Agreed.
But, you know, no more.
No more. We're back to being cold and isolated again now.
Cold, isolated, and dealing with conspiracy theories, you know.
Oh, my goodness. Let's not even go there. So you were very homesick for a while. Do you feel now like, I mean, you've been there a long time. Is LA home now? Or do you still miss Chicago ever? Or do you really feel like an Angeleno now?
I feel like an Angeleno now. It's my home. It's almost 30 years now. I feel, I mean, I've gone to Chicago, made 2 films there and did a TV series there. And I just made a film there this past summer. So I still go back, but this is where I live now. And I live now in the Marina Del Rey. So it's really kind of nice living out here.
Lovely. Okay. If you could change one thing about LA, what would it be?
I would have the actual above ground and the subway would have been here a long time ago, number one. And having people be able to be transported by subway or by train, to me, would really increase community involvement and sort of stores and buildings and offices near these stops. Just kind of in terms of urban planning, I would really love that this city had, you know, kept their mass transit instead of getting rid of it years ago and now have to rebuild the whole thing all over again because there's so many cars here.
Mm-hmm.
It reduces the community involvement of people seeing people walking. So you go to places like London or New York or Chicago where there's people on the street walking, you feel that you can meet new people or experience a whole new area of town just by getting off the subway, you know, and that's not quite, you can't do that here. Here you have to drive places, you have to plan it out. And it's, the highways are very crowded, full of cars, sometimes just one person in the car, you know?
Right.
So I would change that. I would definitely change that.
Yeah. I don't think you'd be alone with that one either. I think that's probably going to be a common theme. And what about if you did leave, what's the thing that you would miss the most?
Oh, the, I guess 12 months out of the year, the weather is,
incredible.
You can play any sport you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could go to the mountains in the morning and you can be on the ocean at night, you know, the evening, you know, that's That's incredible here, you know. It's great to be able to have the variety of sun and sand and everything. And the weather is great. So,
yeah, I must admit that was a big deciding factor for me. I think when the opportunity for me to move first came up, my former boss called me and said, hey, we're looking to immediately, he cut straight to the chase. We're looking to open an office on the West Coast. He didn't specify LA, but he said on the West Coast, would you be interested? And at that time, it was the beginning of May in Manchester and it was snowing. And I was like, can we leave tomorrow? Unfortunately, that was 18 months ago and we're still here. We're still planning. But
A long time. Yeah.
A long time, but nearly there now.
You're saying January, you're going to be here?
Hopefully January, yeah, if not February. But yeah, leaving at the coldest time of year for us as well. So I'll be very, very grateful for that LA weather, I'm sure, when I arrive.
That's great. And do you know where you're going to live?
I mean, I know you've been advocating Marina Del Rey, haven't you? You're a fan. I still don't know. I'm looking Studio City, maybe. Culver City, maybe. I found a really, really great apartment in Bel Air, but I don't know about living in Bel Air because it just makes me think of the Fresh Prince of Bel Air. I don't really know what else is there. I feel like I need to go and like figure it out. So I'm hoping, in about 3 or 4 weeks, maybe I'll be over there checking out some places and I'll come say hi.
Bel Air.
Is that where it's at with the Fresh Prince?
You may not see anything fresh out there, but
I'm going to send you a link. This place is unreal. I'm going to take your insider intel before we wrap up, like top places that to visit in town. If I were coming, well, I am coming. I'm coming for a week. Where are you sending me? Where are the places that I should go and check out?
I think Zuma Beach, which is right above, up the coast a little bit above Pepperdine. Really nice beach, nice cliff side, and the water is great. If you have a dog, you can sneak a dog down there.
I mean, I don't have a dog, but I have a child, so he'd probably appreciate it as well.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd appreciate it. Let's see. What else should you visit? I would take you to the art district downtown.
Okay.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
See, I haven't been there. I don't even know where that is. I mean, I know where downtown is, but
great galleries and
yeah,
cool restaurants and very cool place. I'll take you to Abbot Kinney here in Venice. Very cool place to shop and see people, and very, very cool place, Abbot Kinney. I think Runyon Canyon would be kind of cool to see it for a great hike.
Yeah, I really want to do some hikes. I tried to hike to the Hollywood sign when I was there last time when I saw you. But we were trying to get there for sunset, and sunset was happening faster than we were hiking. We were going as fast as we could. And in the end, we ran back, jumped in my friend's convertible and just drove up to the top in the end because we just didn't have a chance to get it there. So, I want to do a proper hike because that's exciting. That's very different. And that's not something I've really done in LA before. So,
I think that'd be kind of cool. I think depending on time of year, I'll go to Leimert Park, which is an African-American area where restaurants and music and galleries are down there. You have to go to the right time of year, but it'd be great to see that section of town and see the vibrancy of the community down there. It's really great.
Amazing.
Let's see. I think going to the Academy Museum, the brand new, Oscars.
Oh, I haven't heard of this. This is new.
Brand new. Opened, I guess, in the last year. It's It's where the Academy has their museum now for the, the Motion Pictures Academy. And it's an amazing display of history of the Academy.
And, oh, that sounds fascinating. I'd love that. Where is that?
Right in the corner of Fairfax and Wilshire Boulevards.
Okay, I'm totally planning my trip around all of these recommendations. I'm going to be doing all of these things when I come over, and I will report back on them all.
Oh, good. Good. Yeah, those would be good things to do.
And finally, one last question. One piece of advice. If you have one piece of advice, either for me or for someone else that may be listening, that may be thinking of moving to LA.
Don't give up on it too quickly. Sometimes it may feel like... you know, it's a very daunting place to be because it's so spread out and hard to meet new people, depending on what business you're in. But don't give up on it. You'll find your niche and your routine and a group of people eventually that would be agreeable to your personality.
I think that's great. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dwayne. Where can people find you, follow you, learn more about what you're up to?
Let's see. I'm on Instagram. Mm-hmm. My name is Dwayne Johnson Cochran, all together, one word, on Instagram. That's where I'm at.
Wonderful. Are you working on anything particularly exciting at the moment that you can tell us about?
Yeah, a film I just finished called Heist 88 for Paramount. Okay. And should be out in 2023. It's a Heist 88 is a period piece based on a bank heist that happened in Chicago in 1988. This is based on true events, and it's a kind of a fun movie that I just finished. I'm finishing it now.
Fantastic. So exciting. Thank you so much for coming on, Dwayne. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Great, Laura.
See you in LA.
See you in LA.
What a pleasure to have Dwayne join us, and what an incredible story. I mean, can you imagine having your first script picked up by Steven Spielberg? Only in LA, I tell you. Now, you may have noticed in that interview, if you were very observant, that I was telling him about going in January, but as you know from the beginning of this podcast, that's not the case. I did record it before I found out the news about my visa, so if you were confused, that was why. I was expecting to be going over there in about 3 weeks. No longer the case. I don't know when I'm going over, so I will keep you posted. And I'm sure there'll be a whole journey in the coming weeks as I try to untangle the issues with my visa. And of course, I'll keep you updated as I go. But not to worry, it's not all going to be about that. It's not all going to be doom and gloom and drama. I think in the next episode, I want to take a bit of a step back and talk to you about why. I mean, apart from the fact that it was snowing in May when I was offered the job. Apart from that, why I decided to take the move. I mean, how I see it panning out for myself. And my son, you know, is a single parent with a 9-year-old. I went over to visit earlier this year to get a feel for the city in the context of living there. So I can talk to you a little bit about how that went. And I guess the potential that I can see for our new life over there. Of course, I'll also be bringing you another fascinating guest who can share some more incredible tales of their experiences of moving to LA, because I have no doubt that each and every person that makes that move to LA experiences a ton of challenges. I don't know, I have a feeling that probably more so in LA than other cities. It is, you know, it's not an easy city. You know, they say about New York, if you can make it there, you can make it anywhere. Maybe much is the same for LA. It seems to be so competitive. So many people wanting to go there to kind of make their fame and fortune in the entertainment industry. And I think that there probably are so many stumbling blocks and challenges and ways that you need to adapt when you get there. So I'm really, really keen to speak to people about that. But it also seems to me that the ones that do end up sort of pushing through and achieving, well, managing to stay, essentially, managing to keep afloat and find a career of sorts in LA, they're the ones that end up falling in love with the city, you know, for all its faults. And pretty much unanimously, when I speak to people about LA, people couldn't see themselves living anywhere else. So yeah, I think it's a city that is going to bring challenges, but I think it's going to bring a load of opportunities. And, you know, will I even end up having a chance to put my theory to the test? Only time will tell. So stick with me. We're going to go on that journey together. I want to thank you so, so much for listening to this very, very first episode of Straight Outta Crompton. It's a real passion project for me, and it means so much to me that you've made it all the way through these last sort of 40 minutes or so. If you liked what you heard, please, please do leave a review or a rating. I'm assuming I'm going to figure out how to actually get this thing online. And you'll find it, hopefully, on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. And I know that on those platforms, reviews and ratings are so, so important to help boost the show and to help bring new people in. So it would be really, really appreciated if you could take the time to do that. Also, feel free to drop me a note. You know, if you listen to the show and you've got any questions, any feedback, I don't know, any suggestions of people that have moved to LA that you'd like me to interview and bring onto the show, you can find me on Instagram. I'm at LC_presents. I've been Laura Crompton. This has been Straight Out of Crompton, episode 1. I'm signing off now, but I'll catch you all again very, very soon.